Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or Lowe's.com for details.
Hey, you know how Black Friday sales are the best savings of the year? Well, what if we told you Wayfair's bringing Black Friday to July? That's right. Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is Black Friday in July. And it's on its way. Starting July 24th, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, way more doorbuster deals on top products and 24-hour surprise flash deals. Oh, and did we mention free shipping on everything? Everything. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer and the best time to make your home even more you. But it only lasts 5 days, so don't miss out. Mark your calendars, then head to Wayfair for up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the summer. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday and July sale, July 24th through 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome to Activate Yourself with Geeta Sidhu-Rob, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Geeta Sidhu-Rob.
Hi, my name is Geeta Sidhu-Rob, and this is Activate Yourself. Thank you very much for joining me. You know, as your good little immigrant child, there's a lot of stuff that you have to get through. There's a lot of stuff you have to get around. And I don't think any of us really spend time thinking about what it means to be an immigrant, because we are it. And I think we just don't spend a lot of time thinking, why are we like this? Who are we? Because we're so busy struggling with the results of what we're doing and the people that we're having to do. And it's been a really difficult thing also, I think, speaking as somebody who's an immigrant and came here at the age of 15, that the gap between my parents and I was so big. And then the gap between my children and I, maybe not as visible, but still big. And this isn't one of those things where there's a moment where you turned left and it all suddenly came clear that you had to work on this. I think for all of us, including today's guest, this has been something that is a journey that we've had to learn what it means. We've had to learn who we are. We've had to learn why we are like this and find ways of actually healing it. So I found it really interesting with today's wonderful guest, who you're going to enjoy very much, particularly if you be an immigrant, because this is me talking to you, is that this, I never thought of intergenerational trauma as an immigrant. I thought you just had to put up with that shit, didn't you? Because that's where you are. But it turns out it's got a trauma of its own. It turns out it is intergenerational. Who knew? And we're going to talk about that today. So I'd love to welcome Manpreet Johar Burney. Manpreet, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And I love that segue into, you know, being the child of immigrants and just how that plays so much into the story, not just what my parents and grandparents went through before they came to the UK, but their journey here as well, and how much of that comes into my story, because that's a huge part of it.
And I think about that every time we think about taking people and sending them on a plane to Rwanda. And I'm like, it's not like they haven't suffered enough getting here, you know? And people like my mother would vote against them being able to stay here, because my mother's generation doesn't think that they should be allowed to stay here. And I look at this and I think this is appalling. People are already suffering so much. And then there's the difference. So there's my parents versus me. And then I also look at the fact that with my British-born kids, who, you know, aren't immigrants, but their mother is one, and they'll say something and I'm like, yeah, immigrant, isn't it, bruv? And I'll walk on and they'll start laughing and we'll carry on. And so I have a very, very blue-eyed blonde child. So because they're all white, because they're mixed, they're all pale. And I remember her saying, well, growing up with, you and my sister, because my son's also very pale. She said, you know, of course I understood racism, but she never understood it for being her, although she sees it as Indian. And that's another kind of, you know.
That's a different layer. My husband is white, so it'll be interesting to see what our children look like. But I often think about that, like if they're going to be more of my colouring, what their life would be like compared to his.
Well, especially being Sikh, right? I mean, we have so much mix in the system that actually that's why my
kids come out anyway. Like, who knows?
And also, like, my father had grey eyes. You know, my cousins have blue eyes. And there's nobody, I'm literally the darkest person in my family and the brownest eyes in my family, which is all very unfair, of course. And
well, then you look gorgeous, so.
And you end up with kids that are grey-eyed, green-eyed, blue-eyed, and I'm just like, yeah, Sikhism, this Punjabi thing is what this is. So it's you know, it is, and nobody understands being Punjabi until you kind of see these. And I remember taking my daughter back.
I'm going to have to see what happens when mine come out. That's going to be so interesting.
I promise you, every child comes out so different.
Yeah.
And I remember taking her back to Punjab and going, you're going to, and I don't spend any time there because I grew up in Africa, but I remember taking my daughter back to Punjab and saying, you're going to be so surprised that you don't look very different. You're going to be shocked at the fact that I look really different when we go there. And she's like, Mama, what are you talking about? Like blonde, blue eyes, and her hair's now brown. And it is, I said, and she was shocked that people look like her, not like me, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, well, path of the course, here we go. So, intergenerational trauma for immigrants. I mean, honestly, are you just so busy you don't know what to do with yourself?
Well, to be fair, you know, I just started to share my story of like my own journey, my own healing journey, and like, and also the story that I have with my dad and my mom and my grandparents and everything like that. So I never was like particularly going for people just of my background. I attract people from my background. But what's been so interesting is that I've attracted people from all over the world as well, like from different backgrounds, because we all have a story. There's all a generational element to our part. Yeah, exactly. It's not always the same. They might resonate with me because they've got a similar dad, or my parents had quite an abusive relationship, so they might relate to me on that level, or my dad took his life, it might be that. So there'll be an element where they feel seen and heard by my story, by me sharing my story, that then they will kind of come to me to help them with theirs. And you know, this didn't used to be my job. Like 4 years ago I was working at the BBC, I was a change manager. This is not what I used to do at all, but it was just, I just felt so called to share what I'd been through. And, you know, I'd had quite a difficult relationship with my dad. So my mum and dad are like the youngest in their family, and they were probably some of the first brown faces that came here. So they were 3 and 7 when they arrived. So like, whereas their siblings were three, my mum was 3, my dad was 7. So they were basically like English people, to be fair, but so different from their siblings. And their dad, both their dads were probably the very first brown people that came into this country. So they, like you said, that trauma of coming into this country, being the very first brown people, the temperature change, the poverty, all of those things that they experience. And my granddads, when they were here for many, many years on their own, like one granddad would use alcohol to deal with his pain. The other one, just a lot of working, basically. So they were just doing what they needed to survive, right? Like those, I mean, how amazing. They just trekked over. One of them couldn't speak English at all. The other one was very educated.
And I look at my father who hopped a boat.
Yes, that's what one of mine did as well.
Kenya from Punjab.
And I just love it. Like, we're just going to go and make a better life for our family. Like, right? You know, they just rock on. Yeah, so I'm just so impressed with them. And I feel like that really took out everything out of them, to the sense they did this really brave thing. And then, you know, like I never, you know, it's just very normal in my community that, you know, women are made to get married very, very young. So my mom is, you know, that's just what would happen. And it was all very normal. I didn't see any of what I was experiencing as trauma. But basically, it's more now when I look back, like my mom and dad had an arranged marriage. She was married into a family that were heavy alcohol abusers. She's not from that kind of family. There's a lot of domestic abuse and violence. She's not allowed to leave that situation. My dad didn't start out that way. He wasn't abusive at the beginning of their marriage, but he lost his dad to alcohol. He lost his mum when he started to grieve. He started to follow the things that he'd been shown. So the way that his dad has showed him how to deal with grief is get drunk. Or, you know, His mum had taught him how to not feel his feelings and put everybody else first, or, you know, these all these little coping mechanisms that they went through.
Let's be reasonable. We're Indian. We don't do feelings.
Yeah, exactly. So they were just surviving.
We don't do feelings.
Yes, yes, yeah. Well, they're just surviving. They're just trying to get money. They don't feel like they belong. They don't feel like they're worthy. You know, they just do a job for whatever reason. And so it was, you know, it was a very unsafe home that I grew up in. So like with the alcohol and, you know, being in these two generations, it wasn't just my parents' marriage. It was my grandparents' marriage, which I only saw for like 5-6 years of my life. But that was the years that I was developing where I didn't feel like men were very safe. I didn't feel like I could trust them or feel safe in them. And then my mum and my grandma would be like, this is going to happen to you too. And it was just this crazy environment to grow up in. And as the years went on, and my dad's mental health started to sort of change somewhat, where, you know, he had used alcohol and he'd grown up in a home himself where there's been a lot of domestic violence, a lot of alcohol. So he's not really, he's like this scared little boy. And then he's trying to raise children and have a marriage and he doesn't have the tool set. So me and my brother just got completely destroyed by like being grown up in hell, to be honest. Like it was just never safe. And I see now, like I used to really see like my dad as like the bad guy in my story, but I just see him now as this very traumatized boy himself, really. And he didn't have anyone to guide him. His parents didn't know how to navigate this country, you know, like everybody was just surviving. So it wasn't like I lost my dad about 16 years ago when he took his life, because my mum had actually left my dad at this point. Again, no support from their families when they've been struggling. Again, we don't talk about feelings. We like everything when it looks all good, but when it's all breaking down and, you know, nobody was kind
of there. Under the carpet.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to go for a short break. And then when we come back, I'd love to know how, when you have such an unstable foundation, how you create transformation out of that, because that would have taken guts and everything. So we'll be back in a sec.
Yes.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So we're back. How did you climb out of there? How did you even begin to think about it?
Yeah, so I messed up a lot for a while myself, just the same, following the example that I had been shown. So after my dad died, I was probably about 26. Mm-hmm. And then I was in the working world. I was working in London. I come from London originally. And, you know, I was just doing the things that we're told to do, like trying to get a man to get married, because that's apparently goals for a woman that's brown. Yeah, so that's basically what I was trying to do. But what I was realizing is that I was never attracted to anyone that was available. So if the family introduced me to somebody and he wanted to get married, I literally felt like I was going to be strangled. It was horrible. But when I was trying to find someone myself, I'd be interested in the ones that just were horrible to me, that were just not that interested in me. And it was like this pattern that just kept on going and going and going. And I would feel so much pain chasing after the unavailable ones that I started to lean on alcohol more myself, or the sort of vices that my mom and dad have taught me, like working too much or people pleasing, taking care of others. Like I was that, you know, everybody's bridesmaid because I would do everything for everyone.
Yeah.
So I was caught up in all these behaviors that my mom and dad had taught me to how to deal with grief, how to deal with pain. And I think I realized that I'm just not going to live very long if I carry on, like even, you know, this way. I don't see the point of it. So I think that's really the start of the journey for me, where I started to seek answers. So, you know, having therapy, finding self-help books, working with coaches and mentors, listening to podcasts, I started to realize, oh, actually having a, you know, an unavailable dad, being brought up in this really unsafe environment between men and women, has made love really complicated for me. It doesn't feel safe to fall in love. Healthy love doesn't feel safe. Like I would just think that guy was boring. And I didn't mean to, but I kind of was out looking for my dad in all of these very toxic relationships.
Yeah. Well, it's really what you know, to it's you try and recreate.
Yeah, yeah, it's just normal for me. That feels like love to me. Like, don't get back to me, treat me really badly. That's my dad. And I was missing him, even though he was crazy. He's the only one that I had. So I really took full responsibility for myself and those patterns, and started to go into, why am I doing this? What is happening? What are the red flags? Like, what is the red flags of my mom? What's the red flags of my dad? And how am I attracting that? And became very aware of my patterns. And
yeah, can I stop you for a second there? Because you're talking about something that, it's interesting, because I've been a coach most of my friggin' last 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm listening to what you're saying. And one of the things that happens in this process is that we tend to go through layers. We unpack one layer, we process, yeah, we absorb. We unpack another layer, we process, we absorb. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. They look for transformation to happen, like in a very short amount of time. But actually, it can only happen in layers, because every layer is what you're willing to look at and give up.
Yes, that's right. And yeah, bring light to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's definitely, it definitely was like, I chose to not date anyone for a year and just focus on what this was. So that's me unpeeling that layer, looking at my relationship with dad and how I was repeating it. So I really went down into that. And it's funny, it's when I'd sort of made my peace with that, that my husband, who I sat opposite with at work, never noticed him before. But that's when we got together. It was like when I had noticed those patterns, but he was there the whole time.
You could see him then.
Yeah, I could see him and I was like, oh, he's not boring. You know, he's not ugly. Or I was completely put off by him. But it was only after that that then, you know, we got together and we have since got married and all of those things. But it was because I had to do that inner work first. And it's funny how you say peeling those layers. It was through being with him and being like, I'm loved unconditionally. I have this wonderful relationship. But also being like, my mom and grandma tell me that my life's going to have all this meaning once I get a man. But actually, I love him, but I've got like a lot more things that I want to out of life. And I felt so finally in this safe environment with him to be myself. I felt safe to share this story of the traumas that I'd been through and how I was able to change that. And then basically I started my podcast and people started to contact me being like, I have the same pattern with men. Can you help me? It started off with relationships really, and me mentoring people with how I had done it on myself. And then, you know, it's evolved into different things. But because, you know, I always thought there was something wrong with me, that love wasn't possible for me, that I was broken, that I was too damaged, you know.
Also, did you not find yourself in that place where what you had, you didn't want, and what you were looking for, you couldn't, did it even exist?
Yes, yes. Right?
Because you end up somehow in a fulcrum where you're balancing on a pin's edge thinking.
Yeah, it totally is that. And that's why I used to feel like I was being strangled when I'd go on those arranged marriage dates.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, I don't want this. This is horrible. But then, yeah, exactly. And then I would be attracted to these men that were maybe a bit more familiar, like my dad. But almost like unconsciously, I was just picking someone that was going to reject me. It was like how I could keep myself safe the whole time until I learned how to find the safety within me to be able to put my hand out and go, actually, yeah, can I try with this guy? And
what did that mean to you, finding the safety within you?
So I had to do a lot of inner child work. I had to really connect with my younger self and really help her to feel loved and be like the mum and the dad that she really needed. Like I still speak to her all the time, like a crazy lady, you know, and to really, because that's a continuous relationship that I work through. And that was a really big part. Grieving a lot of what I'd been through with my mom and dad, seeing the big picture of my parents, like we put our parents on such a pedestal, but actually that they're just
so you're listening to your mom and dad.
Yes, yeah. So I always put them on a pedestal, but now I could see that actually my parents are just really like human, that they're damaged as well, that they didn't know what they were doing, that they were traumatized by their own childhood. So I could start to see the real big picture in that. So I was just talking about my mum and dad, and that a big part of my healing process as well was really looking at the big picture of what they were into and the traumas that they had been carrying and what had come through from my grandparents, and just seeing my whole lineage as like, oh my God, there's so much that everyone's been through. That's what came to me. And it's not because I'm bad or I'm not good enough or I'm not lovable. It's because they were in pain too. And how do I break this pattern for my children? So that's really what I went through that year, is just really peeling back all those layers.
I mean, also, I think doing that in a year is amazing. You've done, you know, really good work doing it that fast. What I find interesting about listening to you is that I think that I've always thought sort of some of the immigration stuff was around color for me, but obviously it would be because I'm colored. But this is the stuff you're talking about is actually so cultural. And it doesn't matter what color people are, because if you're immigrants, you're going through this on every level. One of my son's very close friends, who's now a doctor, came over here in the wheel of a truck.
Oh, wow.
Right? He came over from Calais in the wheel of a truck. And I remember us doing my son's birthday, must have been his 20th or something. I mean, like not a baby party, like an older. And this boy telling us that he came over in the wheel of a truck rolled up with his brother and his mother.
Oh God, that's my feel sick.
And you know, and you watch him and you watch the fact that he's now a doctor and that he's tried, and you know, and there's a part of us, and he's whatever wherever he's from. But there's a part that's really provides a richness to all that as well, isn't there? Because there's an experience and a grittiness and a survival and a strength to that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and it's even like what everybody went through before they came as well. Like my grandparents are around about the time of partition, and my granddad was a farmer, so he was really affected by the British rule. You know, things like that coming into the trauma mix, you know, poverty.
Because colonialism was very, you know.
Oh, huge, yeah.
Really, and I never sort of thought, because I grew up in Malawi, so I feel like I've been colonized twice, and I never think about it that much now. Wow. To a party and standing in between the permanent secretary of one prime minister and the permanent secretary of another prime minister. And I looked at both of them and I really felt quite colonized all over again. I was looking at these people and they were from older prime ministers. And I was like, wow, you helped create these policies on some level. And it really hit me, which I wasn't expecting at all.
Yeah.
The unexpectedness of going through a normal part of life and then it whacks you in the face.
Yeah. And you sort of like when I've done a little bit of, I had to stop actually. I started doing some research about Punjab and like what was happening. Oh, it just made me so angry. I just had to put the book away. Like it just got me. I thought, oh my God, this is what they were all carrying. And then if you look at the next layer of, let's look at our grandmas and how they're just married as children and they're just made to have babies with like these strangers and, you know, all of that. And the amount of stories I've heard of like incest and all this trauma that comes from, you know, the females and the way they've been treated by men in our family.
I'm sorry to get quite dark about this, but I haven't even understood that incest was a cultural thing.
Oh my God, it's so huge. I can't tell. I think probably about any Asian people that I've helped, I would say about 80% of them have a story. 80%, I would say, have a story.
Right. We're going to go for a break and then we're going to come back and talk about your podcast.
Yes.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, we're back. Tell me about your podcast.
Yes, so it's been running now. It's in September. It'll be 4 years. I actually won an award for it this year as well, the
Yay,
best
that's so
podcaster,
cool.
which is so nice. At the beginning, I genuinely didn't know if anyone was going to listen to it, but like I said, I just love sharing the stories, and I do like interview people that come on and share their transformations and the work they do. I like to put people in touch of, it's taken a whole healing team for me. Like I'm still on that journey. I was talking about that 1 year, but there's been so many elements to my healing journey. So, and I really think that like bringing that to people's attention of how many different people can support them is a really big important part of what I do. But also just sharing my experiences, my stories, and being as authentic and honest as I can be about that, because that's beginning of my life still plays out today. It's even plays out in my business sometimes, or in my journey to becoming a mum. Like it's come around, like I'm always healing that next layer, like you say, and coming to that next thing and bringing awareness to a new thing, which I do share. So I love doing it. It's like one of my favorite parts of the week to sort of share that. And it's doing well and it's helping people over the
What
world,
is
which is
it called?
wonderful. It's called Heart's Happiness.
Heart to Happiness. And do you speak on your own as well?
Yeah, so I do solo podcasts and I also interview people too. So I'll maybe have like inspirational people that are sharing their stories of trauma transformation, or people that help on journeys as well, like coaches and mentors and healers and things like
Oh,
that.
that's so cool.
And then I do like a lot of my own. I love my solo podcasts actually, because I could just talk forever, like just pressing record. So I love that. So it's been such a like it started just as a passion project, and who knew that's a new career, like a whole new life that was created just from following my intuition when the voice went, you should really start a podcast, and I just followed it.
Oh my gosh, I love that for you. That is just so cool. Good. And you help people to heal from this intergenerational trauma as well, don't you?
Yes, that's right. So again, it started off very much like helping people to heal from whatever their trauma story is, looking at their grandparents, their parents, and how it's playing up in their behaviors and how they're surviving right now. And as the years have gone on, so many people have been inspired by what I've done, which is, healing trauma and then helping others, that they've wanted to do the same, which has been so nice. So now I get to help people to help other people so we can carry on. Now, like my big mission is to break cycles of trauma. And I've realized long ago that it's not something I could do on my own. So being able to help people to help others is such a nice, amazing part of it as well.
How do you do that? How do you help them to help others?
I through coaching as well, so a bit more like mentorship again of how I have been able to build my business and grow my platforms and things like that, and the inner work they need to do, because there was a lot of healing again that I had to do to feel worthy. I didn't feel, it wasn't safe for me to have a voice. It wasn't safe for me to
No.
express myself.
Oh,
I wasn't
no.
allowed to tell my story. That's right. So I had to do a lot of work to be able to even press record. So now that's kind of like, it's more like doing the healing work that people need to do to be able to put their gift out into the world.
I love that. That's so fabulous. So I'd like to encourage everybody to look up what Manpreet is doing. Spend more time in that space. Manpreet, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely to chat with you today.
Yeah, it's been so good to have you. And it's gone very fast, actually, quite funnily.
Yes, it has.
Please look up Manpreet, look up what she's doing. And if you're an immigrant, remember that there is nothing wrong with you. It is what we all are, actually, at some stage and some level.
Like a powerful as well, right?
Exactly. There is so much of my success, I'm sure, comes because I'm an immigrant. The fact that I'm an entrepreneur, the fact that I'm adaptable, the fact that I have a really high risk profile, the fact that I have enormous amounts of grit and strength, the fact that I have a lot of friggin' attitude and I'm deeply unemployable, I'm pretty sure comes from being an immigrant as well. But it has made me, on so many levels, something that is so much better at everything that I do. And so there are those things of being an immigrant. And then the more that we heal, the more that we have the opportunity to access the joys of what come from these things we've had no choice in.
Yeah.
My name is Geeta Siddharup. This is Activate Yourself. Please join me again, and thank you very much for spending time with me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Geeta Sidhu Rob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.